Welcome to In His Footsteps with award-winning author Margaret Agard, sharing practical tips for living a joy-filled life and amazing interviews with people who do. Now here's Margaret.
Are you in your comfort zone? I met with a friend last week, a college girl who didn't go back to college this semester, almost finished, and she stopped because she's in her comfort zone, working a job in her own apartment, can't visualize what life would be like after she finishes college. Has that ever happened to you? Today's guest, Jason Jaggard of Spark, is going to help us learn how to spark and get ourselves out of the comfort zone.
In His Footsteps, brought to you by the Amazing Bible Timeline. Quickly see 6,000 years of Bible and world history together on one color-coded wall poster. Find out more about the Amazing Bible Timeline at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
Okay, I'm very excited to have you meet Jason Jaggard of Spark. But before I introduce you to Jason, I want to tell you what I'm doing. I have started eating for charity. I know. I love spaghetti. So I've been looking through the papers, and every time someone's having a spaghetti dinner as a fundraiser, I'm going to it. I will go to other things, barbecues, etc., but I really prefer spaghetti. So if you have a fundraiser going on around you and you're going to be having a spaghetti dinner, give me a call. I'll do my best to show up. Call me 304-678-4300. Let me know about your spaghetti dinner fundraising. Thanks. Okay, now, Jason. Hey, Jason Jaggard, author of Spark. How come you called your book Spark?
It's based off of the company that I'm a part of. It's called Spark Good, and the product that we have, which is called Spark Groups. And we actually, they used to be called Risk Groups, but the word Spark was really fantastic in terms of capturing the essence of what we're talking about, which is, you know, the flash of life that happens when you take a risk and you go outside your comfort zone, and that spark, that moment when you do something, you step into the unknown and you actually take a risk.
That's great. And, you know, it does make me think of, you know, when we're starting a fire. We live out here in the country. We start fires all the time. You need that first spark. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
of course, yeah.
Yeah. So how come you wanted to write this book? Well, you have groups. You're out speaking. So why the book?
Yeah, so, I mean, the book is really based off of the research in the last few years that we've done. And Spark Groups, there have been over 10,000 people who participated in Spark Groups all over the world. And so out of that really came this desire to put the conversation we've been having for the last few years and to put it into book form. And really what was happening was we were seeing people missing one of the biggest conversations that people need to have in order to grow as a human being. And there's actually a lot of research done on the reality that the one thing that people need to grow more than anything else, more than information or education or socioeconomic status, is the ability to take personal responsibility for their own lives.
Personal responsibility for their own lives. Explain that. And where you saw it missing.
Yeah, so with personal responsibility, what we're talking about is the capacity to say, it is up to me to partner with God, like, rather than looking outside of yourself for resources in order to move forward in your life. You have to look at yourself and say, okay, no one can make choices for me. I have to make choices. No one can move forward in my life other than me. Like, the problems that are in my life, I can't blame on other people necessarily. I have to make choices on my own, and then inviting God into that process. And that's how people grow. When you look at when people do grow, it's because they had that moment when they said, either I'm tired of this, or they're excited about some vision, or they're in some kind of painful moment, and they're like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And so they start behaving differently, and that's called change.
How do you invite God into it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the easy part, actually. Most people invite God into their, you know, I mean, most people invite God into their lives without taking responsibility for their lives. And that's what happens when we say, you know, God, you change things, you do things, but then we don't actually join him in what he's wanting to do in our lives.
So he might be saying to you, well, it will change if you take this risk or if you go have this conversation. And you're like, no, you just change it without me participating. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, God is wonderfully collaborative, and he's always inviting us to jump in and join him in what he's doing, not only in the world, but in our own lives. And I think unintentionally we create theologies and paradigms and say that God's supposed to do everything, and there's some things that God says, this one's on you. You got to do this, and as you move, I'll join with you and do the things that you can't do on your own.
You know, there's a paraphrase of that poem about, you know, footsteps in the sand. And have you seen the one where they've got like these big circles next to it? Like, what's that? And he says, yeah, well, that's where I dropped you on your butt because I'm not going to keep carrying you. It's time for you to get up and do some walking.
Sure. I mean, that's a good point. You know, and I love the original one. You know, of course, just when I carried you. And I think there are seasons of God carrying us for sure. And I think there are other seasons of us running alongside each other. You know, and I think both of those are beautiful seasons. And I think sometimes when God is calling us to run, we want him to carry us. And times when God is carrying us, we think that we're actually running. And spiritual maturity is being able to diagnose what season of life we're in and what's realistic to expect of ourselves and what is God expecting from us, and not being afraid to step into those moments. And most people I know aren't afraid to be carried. They're afraid to run. You know, so the book was really written as a challenge to say, hey, maybe it's time to move away from a carried paradigm and step into a running paradigm with God.
Right. So this book, Spark, Jason, that you wrote, and as you met with all these people in the Spark groups, what have you learned about why people don't take more risks?
It would be all the things that you probably think. I mean, the biggest thing that keeps us from taking risks is fear. And actually, the human body doesn't differentiate between positive and negative change. And so all change evokes kind of a cycle of grief. All change, even if you win the lottery, is painful. And it's so funny. One of my friends, I was talking with him this morning, he's a recruiter, and so he creates amazing opportunities for people to make more money, move across the country, you know, better living conditions, better, you know, weather, all this kind of stuff.
He's not a serviceman recruiter. He's a career recruiter. Okay.
Yeah, career recruiter. And he was just musing about how interesting it is, how people, even though it's absolutely a better deal, like in every possible way, we're still afraid. And it's fascinating how we have this filter of fear that really keeps us from stepping into things that, if we're in our more sober moments, we know are good choices. We know are great moments, but we just kind of, you know, whatever we're experiencing in any given moment is so much more comforting, and they just become so comfortable. And you might be talking to a friend in a toxic relationship saying, hey, what are you doing? Like, this is bad. They're hurting you this way, you know, but it's just what we've always experienced.
Can you think of an example of someone who had that and then took their spark risk and it changed?
Yeah, totally. So one of my favorite stories to tell is a woman named Jennifer Kenning, and she's fantastic. She lives here in L.A., and she is a very successful businesswoman. And she had always had this dream. She's super busy, but she'd always had this dream of starting a nonprofit that would give beds to the homeless. She watched The Blind Side starring Sandra Bullock a few years ago, and that really impacted her. And then she was a part of a church community and wrote a book written by the pastor and kind of talked about, you know, living your dreams and everything. So she's kind of just carrying this.
Let's pause for just a minute and get people up to speed, because in case they didn't see the movie Blind Side, there's a point at which they've taken this homeless youth into their home, and she has made him a room, the mother. A room, and she brings him in and says, this is your room. And he said, I've never had one of these. And she said, what, a room to yourself? And he said, no, a bed.
Yeah. Powerful moment, right? And that really stuck with Jennifer. And so that dream was kind of inside of her, latent, just kind of hanging out. And it's easy to put those dreams off. I mean, starting a nonprofit is no small thing, but even smaller things in our lives, like having a meaningful conversation or serving somebody we love in a significant way, we get these ideas all the time. And I think this is God whispering to us, hey, you could do this, hey, you could do this, hey, you could do this, and we just kind of sit on it. And so finally she joined a Spark group with me and some of my friends, and this is years ago in Santa Monica. And over the course of the 5 weeks, she, among other things, you know, filed the paperwork for the 501c3, started some funding, found a business partner, and started moving forward. And a good night's sleep now is a nonprofit, and they're in, I think, their third year of existence, and they're doing very well. And they partnered with Oprah for the Women's Shelter downtown Los Angeles, and have given literally hundreds, maybe thousands of beds away to the homeless.
Wow.
And it's radically changed her life, and it just started with that small step forward and moving out of, you know, the normal confines of what she's doing. And, you know, she likes to travel, and she goes to concerts all the time, and stepping a little bit away from that, stepping into something that is probably a little uncomfortable, but in the end produced a much more satisfying result in your life.
What exactly is a Spark group?
Yeah, so a Spark group is where you get together with a bunch of your friends. Sometimes we do it in businesses. Sometimes we do a lot of it. We have campaigns for churches And then we also work with universities a lot, working with residence life, student orientation. And it's where students get together, adults get together, co-workers get together for 5 weeks, one time a week for 5 weeks, to take four risks around the question, what's one risk I can take this week that makes myself a better person and the world a better place?
But how many people would be optimum size?
You know, it really depends. We say around 10 to 15, but some people, that freaks them out. Some people like to do more. My friends and I did a mega spark here in February where we invited about 30 to 40 people, and that was a lot of fun. So some people only want to do it with like four or five of their friends. It really just kind of depends on what's comfortable for you.
Okay, and the two questions that you're asking yourself, repeat those again, please.
Sure. It's what's one risk I can take this week that makes either myself a better person or the world a better place?
And then you do that for 5 weeks. So the first week, so you're going to take four risks, because the last week, the fifth week, is when you do the final report. The first week you start. Okay.
Right. And every week you kind of give a report. Like every week you come back and you share how the risk went, and if it didn't go the way that you thought, or if it went better than you thought, and everyone laughs together or cheers together, or, you know, roots together. And it's a lot of fun. It's one of the most powerful community development experiences that I've ever been a part of in my life, and the stories that have come out of it have been just really fabulous.
I love the story about the girl who wanted to be a coach for Olympic athletes.
Yeah.
Tell that story to us.
Oh, yeah, she's a sweetheart, and her risk was to, tell her coach that she wanted to be an Olympic athlete or an Olympic coach someday. And, which, you know, she's kind of a shy girl, so having that conversation with her coach was a little bit of an uncomfortable thing. And you know, for me, that would not be that necessarily a big of a deal, but that's what's fun about Sparks, is you get to choose what's challenging for you. No one else can choose that for you. And so she went into his office, and, you know, she kind of fumbled around and fidgeted around and finally said, hey, you know, my dream is to be an Olympic trainer someday. And because he was, you know, a kind man and a gentle man, he was like, well, that's impossible, you know, and just totally burst her bubble. And she, you know, he said, that you'd have to have connections in Colorado Springs. That's where you do your internships there. It's really competitive, and it's just really, really difficult. And so she was kind of discouraged. And before she left, he, you know, picked up the phone, dialed a number, and then said, hey, Karen, yeah, hi, how's things in Colorado? Good. Yeah, hey, I've got a girl here who needs to do an internship with you. She's fantastic. Handed her the phone in the meeting. And then, 3 years ago, she went to Colorado Springs for an internship at the Olympic training headquarters, and she was on her way to becoming an Olympic coach.
That's wonderful. Open your mouth is just part of it. But suppose, hey, it just left it, you know, because sometimes it does fail. Like, what if he had just left it at that? Yep, you know what? That's too hard. What happens when it doesn't go well? And then we get afraid of going the next week and trying again. What happens?
Well, yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. Actually, one of the values that we have for Spark Groups is failure. I mean, failure is one of the greatest attributes of someone who's successful, learning how to fail well, learning how to fail fast, and learning how to learn from our failures. And so that happens all the time. And what's nice is the context of failure is community. And so if you give yourself to living this kind of lifestyle, you're going to need friends who can cheer for you and help you kind of get up off the ground when things don't go the way that you hoped they would. But the reality is you're going to experience failure in your life whether you're trying anything or not. The point is, are you going to maximize those failures, and you're going to have really great failures to learn from rather than kind of small ones that don't really mean a whole lot and don't really sting as much, and you don't really learn as much from them. And one of my favorite stories about failures, a kid named Jordan, and again, this is a student at Pepperdine University, and his risk was to, this is also years ago, his risk was to compose a love song for this girl. He didn't play the guitar, but he was a very confident young man, and we were going to compose this love song for this girl who did not really know that he existed, and we were all excited. And so he goes off during the week and, you know, does this thing, and he comes back with a big smile on his face, and we think it went really well, and we're like, hey, how'd it go? And he looks at us and he just says with a big smile, terrible, and tells us like this just crash and burn story of, you know, how poorly it went. It just didn't go the way that he hoped that it would, and you know, that was a beautiful experience for us to share with him, because the point isn't that things always go the way that you want. The point is that you're becoming the kind of person you long to be, and Jordan longs to be the kind of guy who's not afraid to love somebody. And, you know, you and I probably both know that whenever you make the risk to love somebody, you have no guarantees that it's going to go the way that you want. And the mistake is to not make a decision to ever love anyone. And that would be a horrible way to spend your life, rather than saying, no, I'm going to choose to love people anyway, knowing that, you know, sometimes it just doesn't go the way we hoped.
This is what we used to tell our children, because we spent a lot of time visiting our elderly neighbors. Well, the thing about elderly people is they die. And so we said that to them. You know, we can be out there loving them and caring for them, knowing that they're probably going to die before you even hit your teen years. And you had that wonderful experience of knowing them. Or we can hide out and not do it. And now I want to take just a second. After this, I want you to talk about Father Fulco and how his wisdom changed your life.
Yeah.
But for those who just joined us, this is Margaret Agard with In His Footsteps, and you're meeting today Jason Jaggard, author of the book Spark and the founder of the group Spark, where people take risks. And we are talking in particular about failure. And so tell me about Father Fulco, because this goes along with it.
He said, hey, I want you to make a list of all the things you don't like about yourself. And so, everyone writes stuff down. It's kind of quiet. And I expected him to say, God loves you, even though you have those things. You know, and that's kind of a nice message, and I've heard that message before. And it's not what he said. Actually, what he said really shaped my life. He said, God loves you, and actually those are the very ways that he loves you. And he's going to use those things to touch the world in a way that other people who haven't had those experiences or don't have those things, quote-unquote, wrong with them, he's going to actually use them to bring beauty into people's lives. And that was a real paradigm shift for me to look at my life in the wholeness of gratitude and to actually see my life as a resource for being creative and for creating something unique in the world that not only refines me into the image of God more, but also it makes a positive impact, the kind of impact that God is calling us to make.
And so it's your weird nose that makes you unique, and it's the fact that you are constantly stubbing your toe when you walk through a room that makes you unique, and God's going to use those things to bring about beauty in the world. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, and absolutely. And what's really amazing about him, that we can actually learn from him as people who are creative or who want to be more innovative, that God is actually the most innovative of us all, because he takes whatever we throw at him in our lives, and he promises to leverage that to do something meaningful and beautiful.
Oh, he's like that chef show. Like, here, give me the ingredients. I can make something delicious.
That's exactly right.
That's great. Well, often we get so used to hearing certain words, we just forget them. That you say them and they don't even have any meaning anymore, like faith, hope, and love. And in your book, you actually use different words simply to get people to kind of crack open that nut. So what are the words you use to get people to recognize something different there?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking. Yeah, that's one of my favorite chapters of the book, is just taking biblical language and reframing it the way that the biblical writers used to. They found this wonderful creativity, and so kind of building on that, saying, okay, what are some words that are essentially synonyms to faith, hope, and love that maybe kind of dust the dust off of them and help us kind of see them in a fresh new way? And so with faith, we like to use the word risk. James said that faith without deeds is dead, and so really to understand the essence of faith is to understand risk. And when in the scriptures, whenever people talk about people's faith, it's always combined with a risk that they took. And so to understand, show me the faith that you have, and I will look at the risks that you're taking.
I just walked up to this river with a million Israelites behind me and the army behind them, and I said, split this river.
Exactly. Or, walk on water, or, take your son up and offer a sacrifice. I mean, all these things are stepping into the unknown and watching God come through in ways we never could have anticipated, and even Jesus's risk of love by going to the cross and being executed by the Roman government. I mean, these are all risks that these people took and that God did incredible things with. And, of course, Paul was constantly taking risks in his journeys and getting stoned and beaten, and the whole the whole lineage of people who are connected to Jesus or people who are connected to risk, and that seems to be the missing link of discipleship in terms of our own spiritual transformation, is our capacity to actually step into the unknown and to challenge ourselves and to take risks. And so that's kind of how we define faith. And now hope, so with hope, we really like the word optimism, and it's this kind of sense of believing that the future is going to be better than today. Not necessarily that the future is going to be exactly what I want it to, so it's not a promise that I'm going to be rich someday or that I'm going to have the family that I want. You know, I don't feel like God ever promises those things, but he does promise that he will accomplish his work in us. And when we attach our optimism to the transformation of our character into his likeness, that's something we can always take to the bank and know that he's going to deliver on. And it's just having that kind of that natural sense of a positive regard for the future. So that's optimism. And then, of course, the last one is love. And love is always kind of an overused word, and lots of people define that in a lot of different ways. And so we prefer to use the word compassion. And, of course, the word passion, the passion of the Christ, the word passion means to suffer. And compassion means to suffer with. And so you know that you love someone when you're willing to step into the suffering of somebody else and suffer with them. And
who said, I'm going to give up some of my time and a lot of my energy to help people have beds.
That's exactly right. And even with us, with our friend Jordan, when his love song composure didn't go exactly the way that he hoped that it would, even though it was lighthearted suffering, there was a little bit of a sting there, and we all went through that together. And obviously that's one facet of love, that love encompasses more than that. But in terms of, I think, what the world is looking for from people who are connected to Jesus, they're looking for people who are willing to step into the mess and who are willing to kind of walk alongside people through their darker moments and their darker choices and to champion them and to invite them into, I would say, even a healthier form of suffering, a suffering not born out of self-destructive behavior, but a suffering born out of stepping into those powerful and beautiful moments that God wants us to have.
And so your Spark group actually helps people do that. And it's a limited time. It's not like you have to do this the rest of your life. It's 5 weeks.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Take 4 risks.
Yeah.
Yep. And in fact, for some people listening to this, the very first risk would be simply putting a Spark group together. Is there a website for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's sparkgood.com. And I like what you said. It doesn't go forever. It's only 5 weeks. We like to say we like our Spark groups to be like a good first date where it ends before you're ready, which will leave you wanting more.
Jason Jaggard, author of Spark and founder of the Spark groups. Is there a spiritual healing that comes from this? I'm actually doing a series on spiritual healing starting next week. I'd be interested if you have noticed how when people take that risk to make themselves a better person or the world a better place, is there any kind of healing that comes from that you see?
Yeah, I think there are maybe two types of healing. The first healing is that God does in us apart from what we're doing, and the other is what God does in partnership with us as we move. And I think you see, at least I've experienced both of those. I mean, ultimately it's God, who brings about healing. Ultimately it's his mercy and his grace, no matter where you are in your spiritual journey, where if you're experiencing wholeness, you can know for a fact that God is up to something in your life. But I think that Spark groups are a great facilitator for both you and God to dialogue in a more meaningful way. And I think that God does prefer to heal in the midst of our action and in our right ways of thinking, behaving, and feeling.
When you say you felt that kind of healing, can you give us an example?
Having the Spark lens makes me more likely to move into risk and experience God's blessing in my life, like financial blessing. There have been a lot of risks I've taken over the last 3 years with the company, with the business. We've hit certain moments when it would have been easier to close up shop or to step into some new experience, and I take some risk. I reach out to a friend who's a business mentor and ask him for help, and it's really uncomfortable and it's hard, and not only does he help me, but he connects me to 3 other people, which turns into a whole new season of vibrancy for the company and impact, and we get to serve people in all these unique ways. And I've seen, and just seeing God do things like that, seeing God come through as I kind of step into the night. We like to say is you jump into the night and you experience the one who catches you, and that grows your sense of affection for this God who sometimes seems so invisible and sometimes seems so ethereal.
Do you find it's easier to love other people when you feel that love from him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself, I think, it makes both of those things, as you take risks, it makes it easier for you to sense his love for you, which helps you kind of have your own sense of self-acceptance. And then, of course, then you offer that to other people and to learn how to love others.
Jason Jaggard, in your book Spark, you said be profound. What does that mean?
Yeah, I think being profound means being unique in a way that's authentic to you, and then also being potent. You know, another word for that, I think, is holy. Like, the word holiness means to be set apart, and I think oftentimes religious people interpret being set apart as being weird. And actually, in the scriptures, the nuance of that is really to be inspiring. And so, and I would say another word for living a profound life is living an inspiring life and living an inspired life. And of course, the word inspired comes from the Latin word in spiritus, which means to breathe life into. And so to have a life full of the Spirit is to live an inspiring life.
And I
think that's what people are going to.
You don't have to become the next motivational speaker to do that. I'm thinking of two examples. One is, how many school custodians are the go-to guy for so many young men in high school?
And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And if he's a good guy, an inspiring guy, he can be that profound person, that holy person.
Absolutely. And to anybody, no matter where they are in their careers or how they feel about where they serve in society, I would always be asking them the same question is there something that you're missing by not stepping into a more fullness of your life? And so to the janitor and to the CEO, I had the same conversation. Is what does it look like for you not to be famous, but to be great? And to really do something that's extraordinary. And you know, what's beautiful about that is no matter where you are in that trajectory, God says, hey, I have extraordinary choices for you to make, and you're not going to believe what I'm going to do if you actually step into them.
You write about the idea of self-challenge. How would you describe it? And how does a Spark group help with this?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, kind of going back to your earlier question, self-challenge and personal responsibility are really synonyms for me. So you can discover, almost as a litmus test, you can discover how much a person is willing to take personal responsibility for their lives by their capacity to challenge themselves. You know, it's the whole saying, you know, why do you climb a mountain? It's because it's there, you know, and I think God constantly is calling us into challenging ourselves and to stepping into spaces that are going to be difficult and they're going to be a little outside our comfort zones. And one of the things that we say around our company is 100% of what you want out of life is outside your comfort zone. The kind of relationships you want, the kind of career you want, really, and maybe most importantly, the kind of spirituality, the kind of faith, the kind of relationship with God that you want is outside of what you're currently doing. You got to risk, you got to try new forms of behavior in order to interact with God in a new and fresh way. And in order to do that, you have to have this appetite for self-challenge.
Jason, thank you for joining us today. I love taking on challenges. No, I'm not going to say that. That's a big lie. Well, I have actually looked at my life sometimes and said, well, I'm just a little too comfortable, God. And then I think, I wish I hadn't said that. And he does open up new ways. But the great blessing is it is always a much more joyful and happy and fulfilling life when we're willing to take these risks. So they should go to sparkgood.com.
It's great being on your show. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Jason. Thanks for joining us. Starting next week, I'll be talking about spiritual and emotional healing, because sometimes that is what stops you from doing what God wants you to do. And our first guest, Nick Vujicic, he's the star of that YouTube video you've seen of the guy without arms and legs. If you have a question for him, be sure to listen to the end where you'll find out how to contact me and tell me what you'd like Nick to answer.
In His Footsteps, brought to you by The Amazing Bible Timeline. Quickly see 6,000 years of Bible and world history together on one color-coded wall poster. Find out more at AmazingBibleTimeline.com.
You can get more information on our guests and our discussion today, including replays of this show, at InHisFootsteps.com. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Margaret Agard. You can reach me at P.O. Box 173, Duck, West Virginia 25063, or through my website, inhisfootsteps.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Be sure to join us next week for more practical tips on living a God-directed life and amazing interviews with people who do.